The United Nations Climate Change Conference began today in Cancun, Mexico, and will go through December 10th. It follows from the Copenhagen Climate Conference held last year. While a majority of people around the world are pinning their hopes on more progress in Cancun than in Copenhagen in terms of combating climate change, most of the world's wealthiest nations are already failing to uphold promises they made last December. Among the many topics that climate activists hope will be discussed is the health of our oceans and the life they inhabit. Fossil fuel consumption results in massive ongoing infusion of carbon dioxide into the Earth's atmosphere, causing the planet to warm unnaturally. Even a rise of a few degrees can topple the ecological balance in our oceans. Coral reefs in particular, which are part of the richest ecosystems on the planet, are often referred to as the climate canary in the coal mine. Reefs have been dying at high rates for years now, alarming conservationists. Among those intimately concerned with the health of coral reefs, ocean biodiversity, and the dangers of the aquarium trade is Robert Wintner. Wintner is a writer, photographer, small business owner, and environmental activist, also known to those living in Hawaii, where he is based, as simply Snorkel Bob. Along with his Hawaii-wide chain of snorkeling equipment rentals, Wintner runs the Snorkel Bob Foundation, and he's the author and photographer of the new book, Some Fishes I Have Known. I spoke recently with Snorkel Bob about his work. Welcome to Uprising, Robert Wintner.
Aloha, Sonali.
Thank you so much for joining us. Very few people, I think, particularly those that don't live in Hawaii or on tropical islands, may think about reefs, coral reefs, and underwater life on a daily basis or very often. How important is the ecosystem in our oceans, and how is it linked to human survival?
Well, reefs are like rainforests in that they are the canary in the coal mine. When they start to go, it means we're on our way out. And even though you might think not very many people have occasion to be concerned or even see coral reefs, I think the ongoing statistic is that 2% of the population of America will visit Hawaii in any given year. And so that ends up being quite a few people, because when in Hawaii, the very best thing to do is go out and look at a reef. It is, as you know, and you can back me up here, an alternate reality of most pleasing characteristics. It's a dimension that most people never imagined, never anticipated. And when they get out there, it feels different in a way that's better than was ever imagined in the heart, the mind, and the soul. Mm. And I think it's obviously important to take care of these things. I think that requires no explanation.
If the coral reefs die off, can the things that sort of depend on it survive?
Well, I think the answer to that is obviously no. And I'm not a marine biologist, but I have extensive experience on reefs with reef life. I can tell you that many species, probably most species, if not all species, go through a period, a nursery period. Now, a lot of fish, either they're born live or they have spawn, and the spawn goes drifting in the current, what we call plankton. But many, many species spend their early developmental phases on the reef. So without the reef system, there's no nursery. When I say fishery, I'm talking about those critters that are caught and removed for conversion to dollars, usually for consumption as food by humans. Every fishery in the world is declining. Many fisheries have already collapsed. And so the more coral that dies and the more nursery area that's done away with, well, then the quicker the decline in our world's oceans.
And once a reef dies, it essentially disintegrates eventually once it is bleached.
That's correct. I think that if a reef develops in the first place, that means the conditions are correct for that development. Whether or not a reef can be restored remains to be seen. Many people now are working to that end, actually taking specimens of coral that are disappearing and trying to preserve them to transplant them at a later time.
So there's the obvious physical damage that a reef has to deal with when someone steps on it, but then there's the environmental damage. what are, you know, what's the difference between these two in terms of long-term effects? You know, in your line of work, I'm sure you're always having to remind people not to step on the reefs, right?
Yeah. And when you undertake conservation work, if it's an issue where there's money involved, you're going to get resistance that's directly correlates to the amount of money that's involved. So, for example, now I'm involved in a campaign against aquarium collecting, and we're going to talk about that in a minute. Mm-hmm. Most people have no idea the damage caused by the aquarium trade, and so I'm getting huge resistance. And what they want to do is frame me as the issue rather than the damage they're doing, and they want to say, oh, Snorkel Bob, you're facilitating tourists who ruin coral. And I've always been the first to admit that if tourists can reach coral, they'll step on it and ruin it. I've been the first to pledge closing certain reefs for tourism. Tourists do not need access to every reef. That doesn't mean you need to close them and say they're off limits. Those meant to find them and get there the correct way and care for the coral are welcome to do so. But they don't have to be merchandised and packaged like all reefs. And I just think that we all need to realize that we live in a compromised world now. And a compromised world is a world of compromise. And so we need to make things work as they can work. And we're also hearing that many forms of extraction or resource use can be, pardon me, sustainable. I was just having a discussion this morning about how that word has become abused and has even devolved in very recent months. Sustainable, as far as fish populations go, often means you can take it all but a handful of brood pair so the species won't collapse, maybe. And we can talk about that more in a minute, but that's the reality that's on us right now.
What about the environmental effects on reefs, coral reefs? If the oceans warm a few degrees, maybe I should say when, which is sort of sad to think about it, but if and when they do, what effect does that have, even just a degree or two, on coral reefs?
Well, my understanding is that coral reefs have a temperature tolerance of plus or minus 3 degrees. And those would be centigrade degrees, which are a little bit bigger than Fahrenheit degrees. As you know, about 10 years ago, there was a huge coral die-off. They say average about 35% in the Caribbean. I visited St. Croix, which is part of the U.S. Virgin Islands, earlier this year. And I visited one reef on Buck Island. It was probably a 85 or 90% die-off. And it's a sad thing indeed. It's sad to see any reef that's dead. This was formerly elkhorn coral. And if you can imagine an elk with those big, broad, flat horns, elkhorn coral is named because it looks like that. It's one of the most intricate, complex coral systems you can imagine. And coral is made largely of calcium. When it dies, the calcium turns to powder and the reef collapses. Sad thing. Now, a few weeks ago, as recently as 4 weeks ago, they were predicting another huge coral die-off. They weren't sure where. They were expecting Indonesia or possibly the Caribbean again. They weren't sure where. But it did not happen, which is a huge blessing. And everybody can take a sigh and maybe thank whoever it is they thank on these occasions. I think it's important to point out that this 3-degree tolerance, we've used up 2 of those degrees. And that's what makes things so precarious right now. Warming one more degree, which is what they thought was going to happen, and it didn't happen, but warming one more degree can have deleterious effects. It's also important to point out, and this is really a gem of trivia, and it's not really trivial, it's that global warming happens when the water warms up and the currents carry the warmer waters. Most of those currents are peripheral currents, meaning they travel around the, if you imagine the ocean as a big bowl, they travel around the outside edge. And the Pacific Ocean, there's a term most people have heard, the Pacific Basin has peripheral currents. And if you think of Hawaii, it's geographically the most isolated archipelago in the world. What that means is we are somewhat immune to global warming and its most direct consequence, which is coral bleaching. When the coral dies, it turns white. What that means is if coral bleaching occurs and all reefs die in our lifetime, and I'm sad to say, and I don't want to dwell on this, it's a distinct possibility, Hawaii may well have the last surviving reefs in the world. That's important for a couple of reasons. If stock needs to be on hand to repopulate other reefs, if global warming can ever be corrected, well, those stocks are most likely going to come from Hawaii. That's how important Hawaii reefs are. And that's why it's important for us to see what needs to be done in Hawaii to protect these reef systems.
I'm speaking with Robert Wintner, who is the author and photographer of the book Some Fishes I Have Known. He is also the executive director of the Snorkel Bob Foundation and the owner of the Snorkel Bob chain around Hawaii. Let's talk about the aquarium trade and its impacts on the ecosystems underwater. How popular is the aquarium trade? And when you say aquarium trade, are you talking primarily about people wanting home aquariums and essentially harvesting materials from the ocean for those aquariums?
And that is precisely what I'm talking about. And I'll tell you the nature of this tour. Our objective now is to try to reach out to the home aquarium hobbyist. The home hobbyist profiles as a 30 to 50-something male who has a few thousand dollars in his hobby. And most of these home hobbyists have the attitude, well, this is my fish, and I paid $50 for it, or $150, or $500, or pardon me, $10,000 if we're talking about a masked angelfish. And if that fish dies, it's nobody's business but mine. Hmm. So get out of my life and stay out of my business. I'll order another one. We feel, however, and I promise you this is an act of faith, that some of these home hobbyists, it's paradoxical, if they're good enough to maintain the aquarium expertly, they may have a couple of rare individuals in their keeping who they've had for a period of time. And these are pets. And pets, as you know, if you've ever had a pet, becomes a friend. And we're asking them, when that friend passes on, it can be a difficult time. Some people might think that it's more difficult to have a dog or a cat who passes on rather than a fish. But having been close personal friends to a few fish, I can tell you it's no different. And we're hoping to reach out to some of these home hobbyists to ponder the consequence of their hobby on the reefs in Hawaii.
Right, because when you're talking about dogs and cats, there's often an overabundance of feral dogs and cats that need good homes. But is that's not really the case when we're talking about
fish. That
is not
the case, and that's where the analogy breaks down. This is wildlife, and so it's wildlife trafficking for the pet trade. No other species of wildlife.
Wildlife trafficking.
Of course. Think about it. It's wild animals. No other species of wildlife is more trafficked for the pet trade than reef fish. And I suppose we're also reaching out to those of our listeners who don't have home aquaria because I need help. Most people look at marine fish in an aquarium and they do one of two things. They think nothing at all, or they think, gee, that looks boring. Or they think somebody somewhere is manufacturing those fish. And that's the problem we're faced with. And so the help that I need, and I do this all the time. I spoke to a high school a few days ago in San Francisco. And, of course, there's no better audience if you want someone to hear the truth, feel the truth, and then stand up and repeat the truth. The kids loved it. And I said that I wasn't asking those kids to make a scene. If they wanted to make a scene, if they felt compelled to make a scene, I'm okay with that. But I want them to approach this situation with aloha, not with confrontation. And if you go into a doctor's office or a bistro or a bar, anything, or a hotel, you let it be known to management that this is not a casual, idle, objective piece of fixture for amusement. This is a severe consequence to the reefs in Hawaii and around the world. Mm. And I want them to say something. And if they have the wherewithal, I would like them to say, I came here to do business, and I can't. But I wish you all the best, and I'm going to check back. And if you can manage to take this aquarium down, then I'll do business here. And I think it's important to say that I'm fully aware that whether I do business here or not will not make or break your business. But I want you to be aware of this, and please think about it. Thank you. Aloha and goodbye.
So the fish are harvested from reefs in places like Hawaii for these aquariums?
Yeah, and I think it's important to get on the table real early in this conversation, the big problem here. Fortunately, we are about to lose the governor who we now have in Hawaii. Her chief policy advisor is a former wholesaler for the aquarium trade. So we've been stonewalled for 8 years on changing the current situation. The current situation is, listen up, campers, no limit on the catch, no limit on the number of catchers, no protection whatsoever for rare, endemic, or vanishing species. And people ask me, how can that be? And I have to tell you, I'm still asking the same question. Now, there's a Department of Land and Natural Resources in Hawaii that was formed in 1956. It took that outfit 20 years, over 20, until 1978 to begin to say that the aquarium trade could not take coral or what we call live rock. Live rock is porous substrate, and it's full of tiny critters that's very amusing in an aquarium. The aquarium trade reduced entire reefs to sandy rubble. In 1978, the state began to ban the extraction of coral and live rock coral by species. It took another 20 years to reach all the species so that as of the mid to late 90s, there is a 100% ban on extraction of habitat, and there is zero protection on extraction of habitués.
So, Robert, would you also extend this caution to, you know, the pet store fish? A little kid goes to the pet store with his or her parents and buys a fish for fishbowl. Is that also part of the aquarium trade, those fish you can buy at the pet store?
My remarks are addressed entirely to marine fish. If it's a marine fish, it was wild caught. There are two species that I know of that can be bred in captivity. One of them, with great difficulty, it will not reach the market anytime soon. The other is extremely easy to breed in captivity. That's the anemone clownfish, Nemo. I was in a pet store not too long ago, and there was a tank with about 500 anemone clownfish in it. And I said, boy, that's a load of clownfish. And the owner huffed up with pride and said, yeah, all wild caught too. And I said, I thought these were the easiest fish to breed in captivity. He said, yeah, but nobody really wants the captive bred. They're too complacent. Look at these guys, side to side, up and down, always agitated.
Oh,
people love that. Oh, my goodness, is kind of what I thought.
Wow. So essentially, the aquarium trade and its impacts on Hawaii are an important question. But of course, while the fish are being and coral are being harvested from places like Hawaii, they're being used all over the country and I'm assuming the world. You wrote a piece in the Huffington Post in the summer, criticizing the New York Times and actually showing that the Maui County Council criticized the New York Times as well for their, in a way, pushing of the aquarium trade. Can you tell us a little bit about that and what the New York Times did?
Yeah. It all worked out fairly serendipitously in that, we've been on this at the state level for a number of years, and because of the administration, we got nowhere. Now, we went to the local level, the county level, this last year, and I'm very proud and pleased to say that Maui County has now passed an ordinance that really tightens the screws on these guys and makes them accountable. They have to provide tax clearances, mortality rates per species. County jurisdiction only goes to the high water mark. Anything below that, state. So we couldn't ban the collecting itself. While we're in this process of getting this thing through Maui County Council, the New York Times ran in its lifestyle, I forget what they call it, home and garden section, on how to be ultra chic. If you have a Tribeca townhouse, you can be ultra, ultra chic by having one of these aquariums in the $50,000 to $150,000 range. And they interviewed these people, none of whom take care of their aquariums. They hire professional crews because, you know, having a crew come in to maintain something in your house is even more chic. And one guy said, well, he first had a shark, small shark, in his aquarium, and it died, and he was really distraught. And so we replaced it with four more sharks, and they all died too, but by the time the last one died, it wasn't that traumatic. He got used to it, so that does happen. That takes care of itself. Don't worry about that. And now he's got other fish in it, and then they had a sidebar listing the species you could get and the prices that they cost. And people who live in Hawaii, many people, especially if they're reef people, recognize these species as Hawaiian species. Hmm. And I became – this the story in the New York Times was exasperating for a lot of people because there was no email address for the woman who wrote it, and there was no place for comments. Nobody knew what to do. Well, it just so happened that the final hearing at Maui County Council was 3 days later. And Maui County Council had a chance to hear about this story of Tribeca townhouse chic people. They heard about it from me. And I told Maui County Council that I had become an official blogger on the Huffington Post, and that's global, and that I had every faith that they were going to pass this ordinance in the second reading. And when they do, I was going to submit another blog saying Maui County says no to the New York Times. And here we have nine people, county council, like county councils everywhere. They agreed on very few things, and they all sat there equally pissed off, pardon me. Mm-hmm. And 5 minutes later, passed this ordinance 9-0. And I wrote the blog as promised, and the New York Times proved to be the perfect foil, and we were all satisfied.
Mm. Well, finally, Robert Wintner, where can listeners find out more about all of these issues and your book as well? You're on book tour right now, traveling the country, talking about these issues. Your book is called Some Fishes I Have Known. Is there a website you can recommend?
Well, the book is available, should be, at your local bookstore, or on Amazon, or at snorkelbob.com. For updates and guidance on the aquarium campaign, we have another website called forthefishes.org. That's forthefishes.org.
And we'll link to those from our website later today. I want to thank you very much, Robert Wintner, a.k.a. Snorkel Bob. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Sonali, and ahui ho.
Robert Wintner is the executive director of Snorkel Bob Foundation and the owner of Snorkel Bob stores across Hawaii and the author and photographer of the new book, Some Fishes I Have Known. The websites he recommended, snorkelbob.com and forthefishes.org.